All right, good morning out there. Welcome back to another episode of Pre-Market Prep. I know you guys don't like it when we talk sports, but if you're here in Detroit or we're watching hockey last night, it wasn't playoff hockey yet, but it certainly felt like it. So we got to talk about that for at least a couple minutes. We've got some news in the chip space, some more news in the commodity space with steel. It's kind of a quieter morning in terms of news headlines, but that doesn't mean we won't have things to talk about. Of course, a lot of earnings still coming in. We've got Dennis hanging out backstage. So let's go ahead and get the show started and we'll get back to it when the intro is over. Welcome to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep.
This is a volatile puppy here.
It's all about execution styles and strategies.
All right, you guys. Yesterday, it was an interesting day. We ended up flat, but there was a lot of volatility. You had Powell speaking, saying we have kind of plateaued when it comes to inflation progress this year. I don't think any of us needed to hear him say that. We know that inflation has stopped dropping at the pace that it was. And that is why the Fed has talked about that it's not able to cut rates as many times as initially planned. The markets clearly didn't like that. Let's go ahead and pull up our indices. The S&P 500 this morning trading up slightly higher, up about 0.14%. Your Qs trading up about the same, or no, trading down. Oh, okay. I think we're getting the weird prints here at 8 a.m. But then we'll go over to the Dow. The Dow is trading slightly higher, up 0.6%. Bitcoin, man, just hanging out around this $63,000 level again after getting up to $73,000 a couple weeks ago. Now $10,000 lower. Bitcoin trading down slightly over the past 24 hours, down about 1.5%. But let's bring in Dennis. Dennis, I know you were watching hockey last night. It was a crazy, crazy night. Like I said, it wasn't playoff hockey, but it sure felt like it.
Yeah, and that's as close the Wings have been to playoff hockey for a very long time. So a lot had to happen for the Wings. Well, not a lot had to happen, but a lot had to happen for the Flyers to get in, and that had repercussions for the Red Wings. So just to recap, Wings officially eliminated last night, but they were close. So what they had to do was win, and the Caps had to lose. Washington Capitals had to lose. But the Washington Capitals were playing the Philadelphia Flyers at the exact same time. And the Flyers, in order to get in, at least, you know, to have a shot at getting in, had to beat the Caps in regulation. So we were worried all day. I was worried all day about the Wings. And I'm an Oilers fan, but I was cheering for the Wings. That there may be a goal. If the game was tied, the Flyers-Caps game late, that John Tortorella would probably pull the goalie in a tied game, and that could end up giving the Capitals the victory on an empty net goal. And that is exactly what occurred. But what transpired to get there was just, you know, unbelievable, because the Wings, trailing in the game 3-1, came back to tie it, then go down 4-3 with 7 minutes left. Remember, I have to win. Then, you know, they look like they're done, but then they get a late icing call for them. So 7 seconds left, setting it up for Perron to score with 3 seconds left to send it to overtime for the Wings, so their playoff hopes are still alive. But unfortunately, John Tortorella was not watching the Wings game, because once the Wings sent it to overtime, the Flyers were officially eliminated. So he didn't have to pull the goalie or do anything. They were already done. But John Tortorella did not know this. So a minute 44 after the Wings tie the game, John Tortorella pulls the goalie in a 1-1 game, and the Caps score into the empty net to eliminate the Flyers. Were already eliminated a minute and 44 earlier because the Wings got to overtime, but to eliminate the Wings and to eliminate the Penguins. So it was a lot of drama, obviously, and trauma for Red Wing fans. That's the story. That's your sports talk for the morning. Wings, once again, missing the playoffs.
Well, it was so short-lived, the celebration for Red Wings fans, because, again, I mean, you're losing the game by a goal. 10 seconds left to go in the game. They end up scoring with about 3 seconds left in the game. Just madness downtown, Dennis. I mean, people were going crazy. And then like a minute later, people checked their phones and said, oh, God, no, no, that the Capitals had scored. And so either way, you know, I mean, if you're a Detroit sports fan, you've grown somewhat accustomed to these heartbreaking losses. So even though it was in this case, it was a heartbreaking win. But all right, that was enough of the sports talk. But had to do it because last night, again, was just a crazy night when it comes to hockey, when it comes to sports in general. So if you're a Red Wings fan out there, as I've grown to be since living up here in Detroit for a few years, it was a great night. And then it was a tough night all wrapped together in one. Yeah. All right, let's go over to the markets. I mentioned Powell's comments yesterday. Dennis, were you able to tune in at all to that?
No, I didn't. So if you want to sum up here one more time for us.
I don't think he really said anything that brand new. He just basically said that progress has slowed this year when it comes to inflation and that the Fed's going to need to see more data showing that inflation is falling toward its 2% rate. But either way, I mean, if you had to go black and white and put the comments in one type of category, you would say it sounded slightly more hawkish, just that he was saying basically that they still had a lot of work to do instead of saying, oh, yeah, we're looking good, because we've heard that from him times before in the past six months or so, where he's been saying, yeah, we're actually looking pretty good. And the market responded really well to it. Yesterday, that wasn't the case. And right when he was talking, I'll go to a maybe actually we're already on the 5-minute chart here. So if I go to Tuesday, he was speaking at around 1 p.m. So that would be right here around. So one. Nope. Hold on. This big red candle right here.
Yeah.
And you can see, or no, here. 150. What's okay? There'd be 13. Yeah, 13:25 would be 1 p.m. So the market took a dip. And then I guess they liked actually something he said a little bit later, but then dropped another again. And you said it going into the market yesterday that it was going to be a chop fest.
Yeah.
And you can see right here. I mean, these are 5-minute candles and pretty big moves in the S&P 500 for just 5 minutes. And we were just chopping up and down all day, all to basically close flat.
Yeah. And I think that's going to continue here today. I think you're going to be choppy. There is a battle between the bulls and the bears here right now. Bulls obviously saying, you know, we just had a 4% pullback in the S&P. Some stocks obviously down a lot more significantly here, looking for dips to buy, saying, you know, eventually, you know, the economy is going to continue to go higher. AI is going to pull us out of here. The AI stocks caught a big bid yesterday. SMCI had a fantastic day yesterday. So that story's starting to perk up here once again. I'm kind of with them. You know, part of me wants to look, you know, at some stocks, but I'm definitely looking, you know, at only certain stocks. That AI story is attractive here. Again, I don't think I'm going back into the SMCI, but, you know, some of these AI stocks that have pulled back maybe become a little bit more interesting. I did add to my AMD the other day. Obviously it's down from 220 to 163. I feel like just the story's still there. I know the valuation on AMD is not nearly as attractive as some of the others, but I think if you're just slowly, you know, maybe adding good companies, reasonable valuations, you're okay here long term. Short term trading, take the long term cap off, put on the short term trading cap on. Still going to be choppy. A lot of chop in store. Fading moves is how you make money in choppy markets, meaning, you know, if we're ripping higher, I'm shorting stocks. We're dipping lower, maybe I'm buying a little bit of stocks. I'm still a little bit, you know, I still think the bears have a little bit of control here. So that's why I'm more inclined to short the rips as opposed to buy the dips. And the shorting the rips has been working very well, even on some of those earnings plays here. AB, they start giving it back. UNH, we talked about that one up over 482 for and then the pre-market. Well, you know, we had about room for a few dollars to the higher side, but then, you know, if they pulled the rug and knocked that back down too. I think this market is just inclined to take profits right now.
Yeah, and that's what you got to do in the choppy markets, like we talked about yesterday. You know, sell the rips and buy the dips. Although, you know, in certain markets, it makes more sense to buy more or to sell more rips than you are buying the dips. And I think that's where you're at right now, is where if you had to, you know, do one or the other, the buy and the dip might not be working as well as it was last month or the month before that. But then selling the rips seems to be doing pretty well the past few days. And I've got the UNH chart up. You can see, like you said, hit right above 482, then dropped all the way down to, let's see, the lows of the day were like 466. That's a pretty big range for a stock like United Healthcare in one day. Sticking with the earnings themes, we did have ASML report this morning. Let's go ahead and get those numbers up.
Yeah.
EPS came in at 338, missed the 343 estimate. Sales came in at $5.75 billion, missed the $6.13 billion. So pretty, I mean, kind of significant miss there on the sales front. I mean, this is obviously a smaller company, and actually not really smaller. It's $385 billion, but compared to like Nvidia or some of the other ones, but still bringing down a lot of the other chip stocks. Well, not Nvidia. Nvidia's up here, but if you go to say
LRCX, ASML, or ASML is the stock, LRCX, Applied Materials. You can see where the chips, you know, are getting hit here. So obviously, you know, there's little pockets, you know, Nvidia's AI chips, something a little bit different, but you know, it is, you know, weighing on that sector to a certain extent. So it's a little bit of a shipwreck here this morning just because of ASML. Stock down significantly here, $50. The expected move is around there though, so it's not outside the expected move. We are kind of trying to take out the support, the low for March back when we had 928. I would say you got major support down to $900 here. And remember, we still have an AI story going here. So this is a stock that they could buy the dip on. I never buy the dip on day one. Sometimes it works, you know, sometimes they snap right back. But I rarely do that because we're just not in that market. If we were in a rip-roaring bull market and chips were flying high, I'd say, yeah, I'm buying the dip on this thing. We're just not in Kansas anymore, folks. So I'm just want to let things percolate. You don't want to just be the first one coming in. Remember, everybody buying that snowflake dip off the earnings report down to 181, 182. It's 150 now. Not the snowflake, is ASML, completely different counties. But we're looking at tech stocks. When they disappoint, they seem to stay out of favor for more than a day. So I'm going to just stay back on ASML, let it sit, but keep it on the watch list.
I feel like this stock is expensive for only doing around, what was it, $6 billion and $5.75 billion in revenue. I guess it's just for a quarter, but still $385 billion company. I would expect that to be a little bit higher, but you can see it is trading at a 13 price to sales. So, you know, kind of expensive there, but yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see the divergence in the chip sector because you do have Nvidia and AMD holding up, whereas the other names that you mentioned, LRCX, AMAT, ASML, obviously all getting hit this morning and by, you know, pretty significant, by pretty significantly. I mean, AMAT is down almost 2%, ASML down 5%. LRCX down 1.5%, whereas Nvidia and AMD are currently in the green. But because we're in this type of market, I'd be more inclined to be selling rips on Nvidia and AMD today than buying them, unless, you know, you think that people are going to be rushing into those names as more of like a safe haven compared to these other chip stocks.
And I think that might happen. I don't expect, you know, and again, you know, we're in this, you know, digestion period, you know, Nvidia is still just hanging here, you know, is it, you know, going lower from here short term? I don't know, you know, short term, I don't know. I just feel like the story is still not over here. And that's why I did sell. And I did sell some of my Nvidia. I told you that guys that a couple weeks ago, that I did lighten up and sold part of my Nvidia position, but I still got a significant position. And I sold part of my AMD up at 185 and I rebought that part that I had sold. So I'm now back to the full size position AMD. And then, you know, SMCI, I'm out. So I still think the story is still in the early innings here. So I think long term, I still want to own these stocks. Short term, it's just the market, folks. I just don't feel like we need to be like, what am I buying? What am I buying? Oh, I want to buy some stocks. I don't think the 3% correction or 3.5% correction we just had in the S&P is the end of it. I think it's going lower. So that's why I'm still inclined from a trading hat to be selling rips like you were saying, AB.
And we had a good question in the chat from Tiny Pie is asking, like, does your trading style change on days like this? And like,
yeah,
what,
for sure.
You know, what, like, walk me through your style and how it looks on different types of days.
Well, even in, you know, when we're ripping, like, let's say January, February, March, I'm just blindly buying dips on his storied stocks, you know, and going long them overnight and then selling them overnight because that's what's working. You know, somebody mentions something on CNBC and the stock can rip 2-4% if it's an analyst because retail's all hot for, you know, the markets right now too. That is all cooled off. People talk about stocks on CNBC. They come on, they give their picks. Cricket. Sometimes there's no buyers at all right now. And that's how you know retail's hurt a little bit right now, because when somebody mentions something on CNBC, it's retail that's coming in and buying that. So they're like, oh, that's a good stock. I'm going to go there. And you get, you know, a couple dozen traders doing that. And the stock can have a 2-3% after hours pop sometimes, you know, even intraday sometimes. You know, Cramer at 10 o'clock would mention a stock sometimes, and sometimes the stock would pop. You're not seeing that right now. So that's how you know the retail's hurt a little bit here. So that's how you know that you're in a little bit of a different market. So I'm not just like blindly buying every dip. I'm kind of just trading the chop. And I know moves aren't sustained, you know, where you get that up move and you're like, okay, we're breaking out now. Well, the breakouts are becoming fakeouts here, folks. We're just in that kind of market. So instead of, you know, going with momentum and chasing stocks, I'm never a big chaser, but, you know, if I want to own a stock and stock's in an uptrend, little check back, I buy, a little check back, I buy. That's not the case. We're kind of, Joel likes to call it the accordion market here. We're just going up and down. We're within a range. So when you get the 3-5% riser, you know, if you are lucky enough to get that, you're taking those gains, you know, and then you're moving on and then you're moving into the next one. And you know what? You've got to be controlling risk in this environment as well. To Derek's point yesterday, and he made some excellent points from T3, is trading is all about risk management. It's all about your setups, but the contingency plan is more important than what you're making on the trades, because what will define your profitability in the end is not how much you make on your winners, it's how much you lose on your losers. So you've got to be cutting those losses too. So in this environment, not taking a lot of long swing trades, just playing chop, you know, maybe trading stocks against each other, doing a little more pairs trading might work well in this environment, meaning, you know, one stock's going up and the other stock's going to play. You know, trading headlines is still working to, and it seems to always work. There's no market environment that doesn't work. But just flat out momentum right now is not working, folks.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to, you know, you got to be versatile as a trader. If you're doing short-term trading, you have to be willing to, you know, take different strategies and take what the market gives you. Because like you said, Dennis, at the end of the day, it's not about how much you make on your winners. It's about how much you're losing on your losers. And, you know, I think that's a lesson that a lot of traders learn over time. I don't know if you guys saw me checking out Darden restaurant stock. Not really doing anything this morning, but I did see people in the chat saying that Red Lobster could potentially be going out of business or is going out of business. And I don't think
they spun off Darden spun off.
Yeah, I was going to say
a number of years ago.
Yeah, Darden doesn't own Red Lobster anymore, but I was just seeing if there was any reaction to that.
But I have a concern here with the Red Lobster, because I have a $100 gift card sitting in my drawer upstairs for Red Lobster that's been sitting there for probably 2 years. I hope I'm going to be able to still use that thing. I better get out there, take the kids or something, and get to Red Lobster. My kids don't like fish as much, but I better go use that gift card, right? Is this going bankrupt? Are the stores still open? Because I'm going to lose that $100.
Yeah, you got to use that, Dennis. But I was checking Darden because I have to imagine that if Red Lobster is going out of business, that can't be great news for other, like, you know, these casual dining chains, your Olive Gardens, et cetera. Yeah. But maybe... you know,
and Darden, it's a spinoff. So you would think even maybe just the legacy, you know, Darden owns a lot of restaurants, Red Lobster, very similar to those. You actually would think that Darden might take a hit on this news. I have not seen Darden really taking a hit. When did that news get announced? At what time?
Is that after the bell? Chat, help us out. Cause I didn't see it until I saw it in the chat.
I saw it last night going by, but was that announced during the day yesterday? So did Darden already have a trading session during this, or has Darden not traded yet on this news? I have no position in Darden, by the way.
Darden, it does. I mean, it looks like Darden tried to like diversify away from, obviously they got rid of Red Lobster, but they have Olive Garden, Longhorn Steakhouse, Cheddar's.
A lot of similar restaurants.
Yeah, Cheddar's, Scratch Kitchen, Ruth Chris's, which is like more high end, obviously nicer, Yard House, the Capitol Grill, also higher end, Seasons 52, Eddie V's, Bahama Breeze, which I've never been to one of those or even heard of that, really, and the Capital Burger. I don't know. I'm not really a fan of any of these types. I feel like if I'm going to be spending that much money, because all these places are so expensive now, you might as well go to, like, a nicer local restaurant, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm with you here. And actually, the Darden restaurant charts is not great either. The stock is breaking down from the last month, making new lows. And I know people just tune in right now. They'll be like, Red Lobster doesn't own, Darden doesn't own Red Lobster. What are you talking about? But they own a lot of similar restaurants, is the point that AB is bringing up here and I'm bringing as well.
And it was spun
off from Darden. I think this is bad news for Darden. I actually think, even despite Darden not owning Red Lobster, so many similar, and they used to own them, I wouldn't be surprised if Darden trades down on this today. So Darden hasn't traded at all. This news came out at 5 o'clock last night. I was just looking. It looks like Bloomberg. And I don't know if it's official or if it's just rumored here yet still. But I would expect Darden to actually trade down on this, even though they don't own Red Lobster anymore.
All right. We do also have some news. I mentioned in the commodity space, Alcoa trading up higher this morning after Biden and is calling for tripling tariffs on Chinese steel and aluminum, which, you know, a few different things there. You know, we got news on sanctions of steel supply but three different commodities coming out of Russia earlier this week. That was nickel, copper, and aluminum. that was helping drive some of these stocks higher. Now Alcoa is getting some follow through today, up 3% on this calls for steel tariffs in China. And like all about, you know, supporting American businesses and buy American, you know, buy American, all this. But kind of an interesting call to be calling for, you know, huge tariffs at a time when inflation has proven to be sticky because, you know, at this point, like if I were in charge, I'd be like saying, let's just get the, you know, as the shit as cheap as we can so that consumers have some relief wherever it is. And right now, again, you're seeing Alcoa moving. What other stocks are moving on this?
You have all the aluminum stocks moving up. They already, so the funny thing is they've already traded up on this news. And then they started to give it back a couple days ago, or maybe it was over the weekend. I'm trying to remember. I'm losing track of days here. This was already rumored. Now, Biden officially says, and he says the tripling. So now they're popping on this news again. So they've already popped on this headline once. I am long Alcoa. I bought that thing, you know, about a month ago, around $32 when it breaking out. And I've just kind of wanted to be long some commodities. And it has worked out. You know, part of me has thought about ringing the register because it seems like this market is rolling over on everything, you know, and I'm up about 5 points in it, which is a nice little 15% trade in about 3 weeks. I'm still thinking about it. I haven't, like, I've been day trading it too, buying and selling it. But the long-term position that I bought in the long-term portfolio, I haven't sold yet. I just thought, you know, I'm just somewhat thinking about raising more cash. And I thought about this one as a pretty good move. And it's struggling up here just to get over this 37.5 area. But then the commodity trade's been pretty good too. And Alcoa is a long ways, you know, from where the highs were at one time. I'm not saying it's going back there. But, you know, at one time, this was a $98 stock. So, you know, there's probably still more room to the upside here. I'm torn. You know, chat, what do I do? Do I take the 15% gainer in this market? We're in a rip-roaring bull market. I would not be selling that. But because we're in this, I just got done telling you, this is the kind of market where you take your 10, 15% gainers, even your 5% gainers sometimes. Part of me thinks maybe I should be ringing the register on the Alcoa here too. So we'll let chat decide what I'm going to do with my Alcoa position here.
Bill's saying sell.
They're all saying sell. The chest, sell everything. Sell, Mortimer. Sell.
Jay Mott saying sell half.
Yeah.
U.S. Steel.
Sell. I like selling half. I do that quite a bit. There's the other stocks moving on this. So CENX, another aluminum producer, it's up 5% on this as well. Nucor is trading higher on this. It's up 0.85% here. So you are seeing a little bit of pop. Don't expect a huge pop in U.S. Steel because that's got the whole merger saga going all over it there. So it's up about 10 cents here right now, but I wouldn't expect that much. Another smaller one is KALU. Has not traded yet. Be careful. This one's really thin, but it did pop on the news there as well. So I'd expect that to get a little bit of a lift on this too. But again, this move got faded already once. I tend to think it probably gets faded again. So I'm not chasing here.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's just we'll have to follow this news story. You know, it seems like we're calling for a lot of sanctions.
And remember, Freeport-McMoRan too. Sorry, FCX. I just wanted to add that one in there.
Yep. All right, let's go ahead and pull up our trusty little graphic from Benzinga for the earnings this week and just see what we got, and we'll decide with the chat where to go from here because there's still a lot.
We're really rolling over in this market too right now. We've given back over half the overnight gains, actually more than half the overnight gains. So just keep an eye. This market is starting to leak here a little bit.
Yeah, we'll get back to that in a second. So again, today after the close, you do have Alcoa reporting today, Las Vegas Sands. You have, Discover will be a somewhat big one. This morning we talked about ASML. We'll talk about Travelers, which I now know what the company does. We have Abbott. We have U.S.
Well, Abbott reported this morning.
Yeah. These are the ones. So the one on the left are before the open. Yep. So we'll get over to Abbott in a second. And then tomorrow will be a big day because you got TSMC reporting before the open. So we'll see TSMC can buck the trend that ASML started this morning. You've got some regionals. You got Comerica. You got KeyBank. You got Blackstone reporting. These are all before the open. Again, you have Alaska Air Group. You have Ally Financial. So again, some regional banks. We'll throw those in there. And then after the close, obviously the big one, your big boy this week, will be Netflix. And Netflix has been one that, getting a lot of attention this week as traders gear up for what should be a pretty decent move in a stock that has history of fireworks to both sides after its earnings report. I mean, I always think about the one report that kind of started Netflix's huge fall from like 650 to 180. It got hammered 30%, I want to say, on the report. So, you know, Netflix has a history of moving dramatically to either side after reporting. So, again, that will be the big one after the close tomorrow, but there are also some other big ones coming out before the open.
Yeah, and typically, you know, guys, my strategy is I like to be long stocks ahead of reports. So I've been playing Las Vegas Sands to the long side. I've been playing extra Alcoa to the long side, which worked out very well here just because the report was coming up. I've been playing Netflix to the long side, you know, and I'm flipping in and flipping out, but just biased to be buying it. So, you know, lots of trades, but biased to be long, not short at all, heading to the reports. You know, that's kind of how I play those things. There was more reports last night. UAL, I would like to cover because it had a nice earnings report unexpectedly. Phil Lebeau covering it, saying this was really, you know, a really good quarter here for UAL. Give us those numbers there, AB.
All right, let's go back to my Benzinga Pro. Give me 1 second here.
Yep.
And then let's see, what else do we have to talk about this morning? We were talking before the show. I think there was one other headline we haven't gotten to yet.
Oh, we go back to the earnings.
Yeah, hold on. Let me.
Let's just go UAL. I was trying to lead you into UAL. If you're looking for something to talk about, that's I kind of wanted to talk about.
No, I know. I was just trying to get my Benzinga Pro because I left it to go to the earnings reports, and I had to get back to it real quick. So, all right, for UAL, we had
last night reported. I can bring it up here too.
No, I got it. EPS came in at.
I've always got my Pro open.
EPS came in at negative 15 cents, beat the negative 57 cent estimate. Sales came in at $12.54 billion, beat the $12.45 billion estimate. Let's see if we got any guidance in here as well.
Right before that, I just listed to continue to expect fiscal year adjusted diluted EPS for 2024 to be $9 to $11 versus the $9.67 estimate. So, obviously it feels like that's projected up when you throw an $11 stock out there. And I mean, think about that stock making $11 in the year. How cyclical are these businesses though? That's what you've always got to be careful. But you think about if they do print $11 on the year, you're talking about stocks trading four times earnings. I mean, some of these airlines, I own American and it hasn't been good, are dirt cheap. Like this is maybe, you know, an area where the market is just so cheap. Delta's probably best of breed. It's part of me thinks these are just no-brainer long-term buys here, but then the businesses are so bloody cyclical. And you know what? You know, it just takes a little pocket of downturn in the economy or oil to keep ripping, and those numbers can change dramatically here. So you always have to be careful chasing great airline earnings. With that being said, $11 print on UAL would be phenomenal. Again, that's just guides. I haven't done that yet, but you're talking about stocks with 48 to 40. Now talking about making $11. It's like the stock completely seems disconnected from where the company is where the company is performing here right now. So I kind of, you know, I'm not going to chase again. You can't chase anything in this market here. And maybe you don't even want to like be thinking about longs here, but wow, you know, these airlines are dirt cheap right now.
Yeah, and I think right now with the earnings that you saw with United, I mean, to report that and to give that strong guidance, when you have all these, no pun intended, headwinds in the space with like the Boeing, you know, planes not being delivered as many as they thought, and the airlines having to cancel some flights here and there.
Oil prices going higher.
Prices going higher, yeah. You know, jet fuel becoming more expensive, all these things. I mean, to report that, I think you had a lot of people skeptical heading into this report. You can just see on the daily chart. I mean, UAL went from around $50 down to 40 into the report. So like maybe that bar was just lowered a little bit, but either way, brought up all these other airlines as well. Delta getting some follow through this morning, up 1.5%. Like you said, best of breed. I mean, that chart looks a lot different than UAL's. You can go over to Love, Southwest.
Does.
Southwest trading higher about 0.5%. As well. So I think Southwest had maybe a little bit more exposure to Boeing's, you know, you can see this huge drop in Southwest chart from $35,
which used to be best of breed, has become worst of breed here over the last few years, and the stock performance, you know, has obviously been awful. I mean, all the airline stock performance, long-term performance has been awful. They just aren't the story, you know. And again, this market, so sometimes you just got to look at valuations, and there's just a value trap. And what I like to have is the ducks in a row. I like you know, growth at a reasonable valuation. And you look, and then I always like a story, you know, what's the story with the airlines really? You know, they're kind of firing on all cylinders here. I mean, people are traveling and doing stuff here, but when it was coming out of COVID, it's like, oh, we're going to start flying. We're going to do stuff again. That's all gone. You know, is there an AI story here? Well, the planes have always kind of been flown a little bit by autopilot. You know, obviously there's pilots in there, but you know, we know, you know, there's a proportion that's always been AI driven. So, you know, maybe they have some benefits that they can actually fire more pilots if the planes are going to completely drive themselves. But I just don't see that sexy story that's coming in and saying, ooh, everybody's going to be coming. Who's launching an ETF with just airlines? You know, obviously we have the Jets Air ETF already, which is our good friend, Frank Holmes, who comes on the show. But, you know, do I see more ETFs coming here? A lot of times this market, you know, Cramer was even talking about it yesterday, even though he's on vacation, the reruns. But ETF effects, you know, are real. And, you know, as, you know, more things come on, ETF, you know, like the people who are coming up with new ETFs are coming out. What's the new idea? What's the sexy story? Well, it's always usually revolving something around AI or tech. And that's what keeps that underneath demand. You know, as they launch another ETF, there's more than they're going in and buying those stocks. What do you have? You just don't have that, you know, in certain pockets and certain sectors. And that's why certain sectors just remain out of favor. And even though the airlines are cooking good earnings here, it's like they just can't get any love from the story perspective of it. And that's why there's no follow through.
Yeah. And I mean, to your point, Dennis, I mean, the there's been no sexiness in this airline market for a while. Even Delta, you know, which we can call best of breed right now, has not even gotten close to getting back to its pre-COVID levels of over $60. You can see hit right about $50 a few different times over the past few years, but has not been able to get back there. Southwest, after COVID, I mean, people were, you know, this actually did get back above its pre-COVID levels. And part of the reason was because Southwest does a lot more domestic flights compared to other airlines. So when you had, you know, international travel basically grinded to a halt, that hurt Delta, United, American Airlines, some of these other airlines a lot more than it hurt Southwest, because they were able to continue all their domestic flights a lot sooner after the COVID crash than these other airlines. But I mean, this Southwest chart is just ugly. Got up to $65 May 2021, got all the way down to $20 late last year. So again, I mean, like, I think the airlines, you don't have that potential for growth there. Can you trade them and make money off them? Sure. Can you, you know, wait to find good times to buy them? Yeah, but are they going to ever, you know, outperform like the chip stocks we're talking about and some of these other sectors? At least not for now, you know. So I look at them a lot similar to like the car companies, like, you know, your Fords, your because you're only making so much money. There's not going to be this potential for you know, the growth that you can see in other industries.
Still, that story still is just ice cold. I mean, even though the hybrid story is coming here, and, you know, when I started talking, the Ford chart started to look productive, you know, just a couple of weeks ago. It's like, oh, it's breaking out through 13. Well, the breakout became a fake out. I tried to play it long. I picked the stock up just around 13. It popped for a day and then gave back. And as soon as it took the 13 back out, you got to say, okay, what's not working? You know, and you've got to cut those losses because, you know, when a breakout is happening, what is a breakout? It's got to stay broken out. You can't have the breakout and then, you know, it comes back and starts trading down and lower, because then your breakout's a fake out, and that's caught more people here. So now the Ford chart, as good as it was starting to look here about a week and a half ago, starts to look not good at all. And again, it's been the rates. It's been, you know, obviously the Fed speak. IWM rolling over has been the main catalyst here. All macro effects here really on Ford, even though the company actually is doing okay. That low PE is attractive on Ford. You know, you think, okay, here's the time for the low PE stocks to start being more productive, and just not the case. Once again, you know, the Fed with the kick in the interest rate cuts down the road, that's really hurt a lot of those stocks.
Baba Ganoush in the chat saying the Benzinga chat is moving the price of UAL. Well, Dennis, you mentioned ETF effects. We do have a good guest for that today. We have Lisa Gusto joining us from Global X ETFs. We're going to talk some healthcare. It is 8:36. So without further ado, let's give Lisa our special pre-market prep welcome and see what she's been watching when we get back. All right, Lise, welcome back to Benzinga's pre-market prep. I know last time you joined us, it was during the GPM healthcare conference, and you were out in the West Coast. It's not that early for you this time, is it?
No, in New York, very happy to be here with you all and excited to talk all things healthcare.
Awesome. Well, let's hop into it. I know you sent me some notes, and as far as the healthcare, you know, trade has gone the past year or so, the big thing has been GLP-1s, weight loss drugs, whether you're talking Ozempic, Mounjaro, some of these other ones. What's the latest in this space? What have you been watching?
Yeah, it seems every single day there's new headlines as to what's latest with GLP-1. So I'm happy to distill some of that. Actually, this morning, we just got a report in terms of GLP-1 drugs for sleep apnea in obese patients. We continue to see sort of the broadening of that thesis of GLP-1s originally intended for type 2 diabetes, sort of accidentally came up that we also see a correlation with obesity. And now we're starting to expand that opportunity to any really illness or chronic illness in particular that has a high correlation with obesity. So we just, for example, saw the FDA expand the approval for one of the GLP-1 drugs in cardiovascular disease in obese patients. CMS actually subsequently agreed to cover the drug in patients with a history of cardiac disease that are overweight, which is sort of a landmark decision given historically we haven't really seen any sort of coverage from CMS for weight loss drugs. And now we're starting to see, for example, NASH, so liver disorders, kidney disorders, sleep apnea. There's a lot to keep up with, but again, really speaking to the broader opportunity of GLP-1s beyond what we currently think about today in terms of that simply that weight loss piece.
Yeah. And I think right now, I mean, you have like people are taking it for one thing to lose weight, but then you have all these other effects that are helping them. Does that make it more likely you think that insurance will be able to cover these drugs in the future?
Yeah, it's a great point. When we think about sort of weight loss as a category, perhaps independently of all of the potential correlating illnesses, it has a lot of stigma in a lot of instances, whether it be private insurance or public insurance has had a pretty tough stance in terms of not covering it and sort of instead recommending lifestyle choices. But we do see that there's, again, a high correlation in terms of these chronic illnesses. When we look at, for example, CMS spend in terms of chronic illnesses, it's quite significant, right? So when we're thinking about potentially covering a drug now, that could decrease the likelihood of a patient having a chronic illness, whether it be cardiac illnesses, liver disorders, et cetera. It poses a really interesting question of how do we potentially cover these drugs now to potentially save money in the future? So I think that's an ever-evolving conversation that we're going to continue to see. But again, really speaks to if we have direct sort of efficacy from these drugs in, say, sleep apnea. Eli Lilly actually considering submitting for expanded FDA approval later this year. It really speaks to the opportunity, and perhaps in the sort of framework that insurance currently has, it makes it more amenable to gain insurance coverage.
How is Lilly ahead of everyone? Like, this is the company that just seems like they have positive headlines coming out forever. Like, you know, I just look back, you know, like 10 years ago, and you had Pfizer, Merck, and Lilly. Those were like the big three. Well, Lilly has left Pfizer and very much Pfizer, but Merck kind of in the dust here. Like, is it management? Like, how are they in everything? Like, sleep apnea, obviously the leader in weight loss. I mean, they just seem like they just do everything right.
Yeah, I mean, I will say at the JP Morgan Healthcare Conference, which is obviously the last time I talked to you guys, we did see, for example, sort of increased average success rate across clinical trial phases for Eli Lilly, which is really exciting. But again, I will say there's a lot of exciting development across the board. Sometimes we, for example, hear of novel technologies like cell and gene therapy, which is definitely something that we continue to monitor at Global X. But really when we're talking about sort of weight loss, it's really sort of the sort of success here has been in indications that have a very significant patient population. So we know Eli Lilly, for example, is expecting approval in Alzheimer's disease later this year. And again, really speaks to there's a lot of patients with Alzheimer's. The historic success rate has been quite low in that area. And again, seeing success in these really high demand illnesses is really exciting. And again, we're really encouraged by what Eli Lilly is doing. Both Novo and Lilly are working on next generation GLP-1 drugs. So Eli Lilly, for example, their strategy, at least in the last few years, has been GLP-1 plus GIP, which is essentially an additional technology that they utilize to have a little bit of a sort of leg up in terms of efficacy.
Looking at this, you know, NVO between NVO and Eli Lilly right now, I mean, you can start to see, it looks like some You know, they've stalled out a little bit, Lise, and I'll wait till you're ready to respond here. But do you think that this is because the market has like priced in all the growth from these drugs, or do you think that maybe the market isn't understanding right now what the overall opportunity here is? Like, do you think we're kind of like running? Are we still in the first innings of this whole GLP-1 trade, or has now the market started to price in, okay, these drugs are massive, and now the opportunity, like the trade, has basically been squeezed out already?
Yeah, no, a really good question, and apologies for the overexcited dog over here. No, but again, it's a good question. When we think about sort of the broader opportunity, the messaging from both companies has been, we welcome competition. We welcome additional companies coming in and sort of evaluating the broader promise of GLP-1 drugs, because there is so much promise here. And again, I think that so far it's been sort of, how do we manage supply? But the demand is still there, right? So I think it's so far a little bit of the conversation of, to what extent is this baked in already? In our view, there's still significant runway, not only for Lilly and Novo, but we see, for example, other companies sort of also playing in the space. And we do see, for example, opportunity beyond. We, for example, saw a recent study talking about GLP-1 drugs in Parkinson's disease. So again, there's a lot of work to be done, but that also correlates to a lot of opportunities still to be had.
What about what, like, people throw the miracle drug label out for these a lot, because we mentioned all the different things it can help with. And I mean, I've seen headlines being like, it can help with people suffering from like alcohol addiction or even like gambling addiction, stuff like that. What can't these drugs do? And like, what are some of the negative side effects that we're starting to see from, you know, the wider adoption of these drugs?
Yeah, another great question. We just, for example, saw news out of Europe. Obviously, with these sort of newer categories, it's important for us to continue to monitor potential side effects, particularly when we think about sort of the potential use. We see, for example, 40% of the U.S. potentially benefiting from GLP-1 drugs. So when we think about sort of the potential side effects, it's important to pay attention. We just saw that there is no correlation with, for example, increased suicide rate, or sort of interest in self-harm. But again, a lot of conversations as to, is it a miracle drug? And we would hope so, right? But I think the broader conversation is, of course, preventative care. That's something that, for example, at Global X, we have an aging population fund, ticker 8GNG. And what we think about really is, how do we potentially prevent a lot of the chronic illnesses that are really common in the aging population, in a way that presents an opportunity for sort of companies in the space, not only pharma companies like Lilly and Novo, but also, for example, medical devices. We've seen a sort of increase in wearable medical devices for elderly patients that really speaks to how we can potentially better monitor and prevent chronic illnesses. And that's really sort of the messaging that we take from the broader interest in GLP-1s. Not necessarily it's going to be a miracle drug that's going to cure everything, but really it's driving the conversation forward for, how do we get, for example, insurance coverage for things that are known to increase the likelihood of a patient having a chronic illness later on.
Yeah. And I think, you know, over time, we will see kind of healthcare move toward that preventative care space, because right now, part of the reasons healthcare costs in the U.S. are so high is because you have people that, you know, wait and wait and wait. Maybe it's because they're worried about their insurance. Then they go in and they need, you know, a life-saving operation or this, and it, because it gets to the last moment where you can have all these other things that you can do to not get to that point, and that could help actually drive healthcare costs lower in the long run. So again, I think over time we will start to see us trend more that direction. Moving on from GLP-1s, Lise, what about genomic medicines? I mean, we hear a lot about some of these, you know, smaller companies that are working in the genomic space. What are you seeing there?
Yeah, I will say it's sort of a different lens for that prevention conversation that we're having, right? Where GLP-1s, now the conversation is, how do we prevent chronic illnesses? We, for example, are looking at, how do we potentially have functional cures for some of the genetic disorders. So again, inherent in a patient that might lead to hemophilia or sickle cell disease or other really cumbersome illnesses. So we're having new technology come to market that's really speaking to the broader opportunity to cure illnesses. Last year, we actually saw a record-breaking 6 approvals in cell and gene therapies in the U.S., including, of course, the gene editing approval, not only in the U.S., but also we're starting to see increasing sort of acceptance abroad, which is really exciting. I will say it's a newer area. We, for example, consider the broader genomics and biotechnology area through our genomics and biotechnology ETF, ticker GNOM, but really speaking to how do we potentially increase the availability of sequencing technology for a patient when they go in to a doctor. Of course, when we're talking about smaller cap companies, there is a high correlation to interest rates, for example. So we're really excited to see that conversation start to move more in favor of those small cap companies, because fundamentally, there's a lot of really exciting things that are happening here. One thing that I will say is even how we potentially consider these medicines going into market is really exciting. We were talking about how does insurance cover a GLP-1, particularly how do they consider the longer term economic benefit of preventing type 2 diabetes? When we're looking at, for example, some of these genomic medicines, that we actually see, for example, really high drug prices for a one-dose treatment. And really what we're seeing is the conversation is shifting towards if it's a near cure, that's really exciting. But even with that high drug price, we're seeing, for example, $7, $8 million in long-term economic benefit in some of these illnesses like hemophilia A, for example. We're really encouraged by what's happening. And again, really sort of excited to see the broader conversation of interest rates start to turn because, again, fundamentally, there's a lot of really exciting things happening in the space.
Lise, what about M&A? Do you think we're going to see some mergers? I mean, it's been kind of quiet here, but you know, maybe do we see a pickup here in 2024? What are your thoughts on M&A?
Yeah, we talked about it last time, and we started to see some rumblings of M&A activity at the JP Morgan Healthcare Conference. For those that don't know, it sort of sets the tone for the year in terms of healthcare. And again, really a common sort of venue to announce M&A activities. We saw a little bit there. It kind of tapered off, and we're starting to see sort of a little bit more momentum now. We started to see a little bit in terms of oncology, for example. We just saw Vertex, for example, acquire into sort of more rare disease to expand their broader portfolio. Vertex, of course, in collaboration with CRISPR Therapeutics, actually developed the gene editing drug that they gained approval last year, but really looking to expand their portfolio beyond that. And again, we're really encouraged by what we're seeing. I think there's a lot of need, and that's sort of very clear from a large pharma standpoint, to replenish pipelines. And there's a lot of innovation from small biotech. I think the pace might continue to be a little choppy throughout the year, but we are seeing some really meaningful deals coming through from large pharma.
And then, Lise, also, you know, we got to talk about digital health. I mean, since COVID, you know, there's been a big rise in telehealth, people being able to go on their phone, get prescribed medicines they need. You have a few different companies in that space. Do you think this is an industry that's going to continue to grow? I mean, some of these stocks have been kind of underperformers over the past couple of years.
Yeah, no. When we think about digital health, and it's funny, the way we, for example, consider it, we have a digital health and telemedicine fund, ticker EDOC or EDOC. From a consumer standpoint, the more you know about it, the more you sort of the technology you've had the most exposure to is really telemedicine, which understandably has a lot of benefit. But I do believe that there is so much more opportunity in digital health. When we talk about the AI craze, this is sort of where we have a play in specifically healthcare. We see significant opportunity for wearable medical devices, surgical robots, AI in healthcare, et cetera. And I think particularly the wearable technology piece is really interesting. Again, we're talking about, is a GLP-1 drug going to be the saving grace for the healthcare industry? And there was a lot of concern as to what does that mean for devices in particular. We're starting to see that conversation shift a little bit, particularly in terms of how do they work in tandem rather than sort of competing against each other. We've seen Dexcom, for example, start to increase their sort of role beyond insulin-dependent patients, actually having an over-the-counter approval recently, which is really exciting. But also, how do we potentially draft out data for patients that are on an Ozempic or a Mounjaro, a Zepbound, et cetera, regardless of sort of what you call it, depending on the indication? How do we potentially track wearable medical devices, and how do they might potentially impact or increase the sort of steady weight decline even after a patient comes off of a GLP-1? Some patients don't want to be on sort of an injection for the rest of their lives. So how do we use these in tandem to really, again, sort of move that conversation forward of prevention? And that's where we're sort of at right now. A lot of really exciting innovation in that regard too, but we're from the sort of incumbents in medical devices, at least on the wearable front, a Dexcom and iRhythm, et cetera. We're seeing some really encouraging earnings data as well. That sort of speaks to the broader opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, I think we will see that industry continue to grow. I think during COVID, when people were buying up all these different names, some of them maybe got a little ahead of themselves. I mean, looking at Hims and Hers was one that, you know, I've been watching, and, you know, you see commercials for that one all the time. But again, that space definitely still has some room to grow. You can see this chart here. Yeah, during February 2021, got up to $25. Hasn't even sniffed that since then. But Lise, always great to catch up with you. We love having you on the show. We got to get you on again soon. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Lise.
All right, guys, that was Lise Augusto, again, healthcare analyst over at Global X ETFs. Always great to catch up with Lise. We've got about 10 minutes left of the show. Dennis, let's preview some Netflix earnings.
Yeah, and this is one that's been working. I've been playing this from the long side ahead of the report, and it's been working overnight. It's kind of intraday is always a funny thing, but it's like you seem to buy, been buying on the close and selling it at the opener, selling it, you know, in the pre-market the next day, and it's been working. It's working here again. It's up another 1% here. Just seems to be the nice overnight trade ahead. I mean, high expectations really here for the report. The stock has done very well. You know, we're talking about a company that was back in October, $344, is now $622. So they're going to have to blow it away for the stock to go higher. And we're in a tough environment, remember, here too. It's not like they're just buying everything. A lot of companies have been sold off on good earnings. So I'm somewhat nervous. I'm not planning on holding it through the report. And I actually don't even have a position. I've already sold out in the pre-market here this morning. But if, you know, we're just looking, you know, let's just quickly go look at the expected move here. How we do that is we look at the calls and the puts expiring this week here, grab the closest strike and just add them together. So it's about, if we go to 620s, they close at 25.59, then $27 on the puts. So it's about a $52 move it's looking like here. So a significant move. That seems a little high for me. I don't know if it's got a $52 pop in it. Could it have a $52 drop? It's possible. I think the $52 seems a little bit high for me on the expected move, but I wouldn't want to hold this through the report. Just nervous about this market overall.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of where we're at right now, especially with some of these big tech companies that have performed so well over the past, you know, year, 6 months or so, is just that I don't think like a slight beat and reaffirming guidance is going to be enough. It's
not going to be enough for this one. No,
no, it's going to have to be a big beat and a raise in guidance. And then even then, like, I think the guidance raise would have to be significant enough for you to get that follow through of up 15, 20%. But, you know, we're kind of at this inflection point on the technical standpoint where, you know, I mean, a great report could potentially bring us to new all-time highs, or a bad report could drop us back down in these support levels around, you know, 550 or so that we saw, 575. And again, I mean, Netflix does have a lot of things. You know, we talked about the live sports aspect, the Tyson fight coming up with Jake Paul, getting into a lot of reality stuff. You know, our guest yesterday was speaking about that, or not yesterday, LaMonica on Monday was speaking about that, that when the writer's strike happened, they were actually going into some of these more reality TV series, your F1 Drive to Survive, your Breakpoint for tennis, your Full Swing for golf, Quarterback for football. So it's like they basically took the model that worked and then just started doing it for all the different sports. So it will be interesting, I think, to see this report for Netflix. I think at the end of the day, if you're like long Netflix long term, whatever happens in this report shouldn't derail necessarily your long-term thesis on the company. And again, you're talking about the clear leader in the space, the best of breed, the company that like truly owns the streaming space right now.
Yeah, and that's going to continue to be the case. I mean, Disney has kind of been a mess here. And, you know, Disney has gotten some forgiveness here. You know, obviously the stock had the big run from 90 to 120. Feels like Disney's tired here. I mean, I bring up the Disney Plus, and it's just a disaster too. Like, I got the Disney Plus thing, and I'm trying to – they got an update. And I'm trying to, like fix the update. It's like, try again in 1 minute, try again in 1 minute. So I'm trying, I literally couldn't watch Disney Plus. We were watching the Star Wars. My kids love the Star Wars series, and we just wanted to flip on, you know, and they do have good Star Wars content, but I'm like, the update didn't even work. I'm like, these people suck. They suck at streaming. Netflix, that never happens. You know, they figure it out. They know why the update, you know, is screwing me is beyond, you know, I can't figure it out. So I had to go watch on another TV that wasn't doing the update, which is just annoying. So I don't even know how to fix that. They're like, oh, you can contact some blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, when you send an update, make sure the damn thing works. So this is Disney in streaming. They just have been a disaster, which is why the stock has come down. you know, they had the Disney premium, which got up to $200 because they were going to be competing with Netflix on streaming. They were going to be the, you know, we know they didn't come out with the content and they can't even get the product to work right. So just not a fan of streaming with Disney. Netflix always been best of breed. They're doing everything. I don't know if they're going to continue to get more into sports, but I tell you, if they do, I may even cut the cord. I'd love to be able to watch my sports on Netflix.
Yeah, and the other, it'd be cool too. I mean, I think if a Netflix, you know, maybe you could do like add-on packages, right? You pay $20 a month or whatever for the normal Netflix, but then if you want the NHL games, it's going to be another $10 a month. You know, like I could get down with that, Dennis. I think that would be really cool. It is crazy that Disney, I mean, with the like, how are you Disney and you can't figure out at least the technology of the streaming, which I will say to Netflix's favor, Netflix has done a really good job on that front. I forget where I was somewhere the other day where I had like minimal Wi-Fi, like my computer wasn't even loading other sites. I could like barely check emails on Google and I was streaming on Netflix fine. It wasn't like the perfect quality, like it was coming in a little bit lower quality, but they were still playing the videos and I was like, well, however Netflix is doing this, kudos to them, because that is incredible. Let's see. We got 3 minutes left of the show. I'm looking at the chat. Looks like some people want to talk. WISA, WISA Technologies. Wow, closed up 250% yesterday. Is that right, Dennis?
Yeah, these penny stocks. And obviously, you know, you can see a lot of things happen with these smaller companies that get a lift. I don't know if somebody was pumping this or what it is. I mean, it seems like these penny stocks, you know, just, you know, get these, you know, huge moves. I typically don't, you know, I'll trade the penny stocks every once in a while, but again, like, you know, my bread and butter is the mega caps here. So I'm not falling. I don't even know what the story was here. Do you know what the story is on this WISA? I saw it hit my filters. It hits my filters, but I never even looked in the story. I didn't make any trades on it.
Let's see. I think it was probably just, shares are trading higher after a company announced a 5-year, WISA e-licensing agreement with HDTV, PVT brand. But I mean, like, that's probably not enough to drive the stock up that much. I think it just probably got trending on, like, so what you did see, there were a few stocks yesterday, I was going to say, that were just like trending on social media and had higher than normal volume. You had AMC, close up 10%. Trading up another 4.5% this morning. I wonder if GameStop was running with that yesterday as well. Not really. GameStop up like 3%. So I think, like, overall, the story of in these stocks, like, I don't think we're ever going to see that same short squeeze again. But these stories haven't completely died out. They just have these, like, periodic days here and there where they pop up and then you get these pops. So could be fun to trade.
And that's the thing is, like, these pops are usually just selling opportunities. You know, here you got a stock, this WISA, and the first time I've looked at a chart on it ever. I mean, but obviously it's done a lot of reverse splits because in 2022, so we're just going back to 2022, the stock now is $12,000, the all-time high. Everybody that owns this thing is down money, except for the people who bought it yesterday. So you have just bag holder central all over something like this. Could it go 10, 15, 20 short floats? But long term, if you're buying all these, you know, pumped stocks and social media and they're all talking about it on Twitter, you know, long term, you're holding these things. You are holding the bag usually. Usually it's, you know, and again, there's stock promoters out there. You have to watch all this stuff on the penny things. What, you know, my one buddy always said, the pennies are for scammers and dreamers. You know, and that's why I've kind of stayed away from pennies for the majority of my trading career. Again, it's kind of fun. Oh, yeah, you know, the penny stocks, it's fun to play one every once in a while. But I still, like, think, you know, from a long-term investing perspective here, buy good companies and reasonable valuations. Don't get caught up on the hype on Twitter.
Yeah, you do have some of those scammers back. Zach, I shouldn't say
We don't say, I won't call any names out here, so we don't want people just going nuts on us here, but yes, you know, we know that there's definitely some stock promotions happening out there. Just be careful on that stuff, folks.
Yep. All right. Well, it is 9 a.m. Let's see. As we head into today, let me see if we've got any economic data or anything due today, any Fed speak that we need to be aware of. We got the Fed Beige Book coming out at 2 p.m. And then after the close, you've got a couple Fed speakers. You have Cleveland Fed President Loretta Mester speaking. Then you have Fed Governor Michelle Bowman speaking at 7:15 p.m. Eastern. So if you're looking for things to watch out for, I mean, again, those are coming after the market, but the Fed Beige Book at 2 p.m. I think the big story today, Dennis, will be watching how these chips react after the ASML earnings. You have NVIDIA still trading slightly higher this morning, up about $8, up at $8.81. AMD still hanging in there as well. But then your other ones, ASML, still getting kind of crushed down about 4.5%. And the other ones we mentioned, LCRX. What about you? Any final thoughts before we head into the day?
Just interesting. I was watching, and just taking us back to, you know, the stock promotion and all that stuff, I was watching the Globe Life stock, and I did buy a little piece here. And Fuzzy Panda, who we don't know who they are. They just got the panda with the guns. We obviously talked about this one before. But I found it interesting. They tweet out this tweet last night, and it's about Bo Gentile, who was the senior VP of recruiting at GL, or maybe he still is. And they're showing, you know, that that's some type of thing that he was looking at pornography or something like that. I'm like, are they like, you know, so
it feels okay. Like they're reaching a little bit.
Yeah. Is this not a huge reach here? Like, this is your big short thesis that one of the executives that works there was looking at pornography? Stock selling off 50%, and this is the short thesis here? A lot of me just wants to go and just buy this Globe Life and go full size position. I bought a little piece of it. It's working so far. I picked it up at 57. It's up at 60. It looks like it's knocking on the door here. I the one thing that scares me is, you know, there is a investigation, a DOJ or something like that going on as well. So I don't know what that's all about. But I just know, you know, usually you see these short, you know, like, and when somebody comes out, you know, these short reports, sometimes they work and sometimes they're just, you know, a little bit of an exaggeration of truth. And but the stock falling so much, you know, you got a company that's been around for like 40 years. And I don't really want to own a life insurance company. I just don't feel like it's like the sexy thing to own. But when it falls 60% one day on a short report, I maybe there's truth here. Maybe it's all fraud like they're claiming. And maybe they're all the execs are looking at pornography like they're claiming. I highly doubt that's the case. But I feel like there's actually, you know, if this was just, you know, them somewhat exaggerating facts here, I actually feel like there's an opportunity here with this Globe Life. So part of me wants to go in and actually buy the stock, but I bought a little piece here, but I'm scared because of that other investigation. I'm scared maybe there is some truth here. Obviously, this Fuzzy Panda called the Fisker demise, so they've done some homework and they do some good stuff here too. I find it an interesting story here, though. It's just shocking how much that GL got hit on that Fuzzy Panda report.
Yeah, and it's probably, like you said, somewhat of a middle ground.
I think,
you know,
so.
You know, because it's probably not as bad as Fuzzy Panda's making out to be. It's probably not as good as Global Life is saying, oh, you know, we're fine, because you do have that investigation. There's probably some things to be concerned about, but maybe not to the level that Fuzzy Panda is saying. Either way, trading around $60 right now, was trading at $130 back in March. So a clear opportunity there if it is able to continue to make up some of these gains.
If allegations prove to be just, you know, an exaggeration of facts here. And if, you know, the whatever investigation by the regulators proved to come up with nothing, there's going to be an opportunity here. If there is, if there actually is fraud involved, like major fraud, and, you know, there's a lot of shenanigans going on, but this isn't like a startup. You know, it's not like this company's been here for a week or, you know, a month or a year, a couple of years, and they're saying, you know, this is a company. When I look at, you know, the long-term chart, you know, this is a company that has been in business for, what, 40 years here? I mean, this is a long-term track record on this company here of, you know, 1986. I got the data back here too. So, I mean, I just, part of me, I'm having a hard time not just going in here and buying the stock.
All right. Well, we'll continue to watch this story. Definitely an interesting one. All right. It is 9:05, going a couple minutes extra on the show today. Thank you to Lisa Gusto again from Global ETX for joining us today. Please smash the like if you haven't already. We got live trading starting up right now.